Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales to retailers through Diamond for September 2015. Now, of course, this is sell-in information, not sell-through information. What that means is these are the copies or the number of units that the retailers ordered to get into their store. It does not reflect what actually sold to us, the readers. That information simply is not available, but comics are a B2B2C industry, which means business to business to consumer. That first business is, of course, the publisher. That second business is the retailer. And, of course, we, the readers, are the consumers. And, yeah, I'm kind of glossing over the distributor. They just take a cut of the pie, but they're really a bit of a gatekeeper. But, I mean, they're not they order based strictly on what the retailers order, plus a little for overages or damages, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they don't place orders just willy-nilly, do they?
They, by and large, do not speculate. I think there may be some cases where it's like, oh, yeah, this is going to do way better. The retailers are way under-ordering. But it's not Diamond's place, really, to hedge on that kind of a bet.
Yeah.
And it's got more of a downside than an upside for them. And with the case of certainly Marvel and DC, they're acting as a sales broker, not a distributor. Difference for that, of that, just for newer listeners and stuff, is as a true distributor, or as a distributor for the other publishers, Diamond actually buys them the comics from the publisher and then sells them to the retailer, having taken ownership of them in that duration. For Marvel and DC, they're acting as a sales agent, and this may also be true for the other Final Order cutoff publishers. I'm not certain, though. And since Diamond's not taking that financial risk, they're able to operate at a slightly lower percentage of the cover price and kind of pass that savings on. But it's also, you know, the bulk of their business. So
it also means they probably have less risk.
Way less risk.
Yeah.
You know, because they have to place a purchase order for that, you know, be it a Valiant book or, you know, whatever other publisher or whatever.
Yep.
And that's, again, one of the major bottlenecks in the industry. If you want something that has pretty much sold through, they've got to have a threshold amount for it to be worth them cutting another purchase order to the publisher to get another 100, 500, or whatever the case may be, number of copies in. And it's not necessarily just of one book, but they've got to have enough of an order that they're not just doing I need two copies of this, and a week later I need three copies of that.
And then in theory, when the publishers get it, it's got to be worth it for them to, you know, potentially do another printing.
Yeah, and that's if they do another printing. In some cases, they will have copies on hand.
Yes.
And one of the things that drives me nuts at times, I want a comic, my retailer wants to get it to me, but it's on back order. And what that means is Diamond's not willing to place the order, but it may well be that the publisher has plenty of copies on hand if they could just make that order happen. But it's the nature of more of a just-in-time kind of a system, and also there is a certain cost to placing the order, filling the order, all that kind of stuff. And if it's not above a threshold, it's a losing proposition for Diamond or any distributor.
Do any of the publishers – what's the word I'm looking for? Do any of the publishers sell direct other than on some of the kind of big-ticket items and trade items and stuff that you're aware of? Like, you know, can I go to Valiant's website and order a single copy of whatever the last issue of Book X is?
For Valiant in particular, I'm not sure. For a lot of the publishers in the back half, absolutely.
Okay.
Typically, the smaller they are, the more likely they are to do that. What kind of turnaround time and stuff, I don't know. And again, I don't know if Valiant is one of those. But certainly, if you're trying to find a more obscure comic from a smaller publisher, it's definitely worth checking their website to see if they offer it directly. I'm trying to think of a couple of cases where I know that has happened, and it was, again, some smaller publishers whose names are escaping me.
Well, it happened on trade for me.
Mm-hmm.
You recommended Penny for Your Soul.
Ah, yeah.
And that's the way I was able to get it directly from, is that Big Dog Inc.?
Big Dog Inc., which is now part of Aspen.
Yeah.
Or published through Aspen, I guess might be the better way to say it. I'm not entirely sure what the exact relationship between those two companies currently is.
Want to take a look at the breakdown this month?
Yeah. We've got 43.86% of the total units for the top 300 going to Marvel. We've got 29.47% going to DC and 11.02% going to Image. That's by units. By dollars, it's frankly not that different. It's 44.19% of the total dollars for the top 300 to Marvel, 29.59% to DC, and 9.78% to Image. So really, it was a little over a tenth of a percent up for DC from units to dollars. About, what, a third, half a percentage for Marvel. But it was down about a percent and a quarter or whatever for Image, reflective of a lower average price than Marvel and DC had.
Yeah.
Let's see. If we add in the 3.72% of the units for IDW and 3.07% of the units for Dark Horse, the premier publishers, the front half of previews, takes 91.14% of the total units for the top 300. Obviously, there are a lot more books than just the top 300, but obviously, if they're not in the top 300, they're not selling gangbusters. So this is why virtually every comic shop is carrying the majority of Marvel and DC and Image, some of IDW and Dark Horse, and from there it drops off. You know, obviously you're going to have some stores that are focusing more on independent publishers, smaller publishers, some that is just, you know, hey, Marvel and DC is enough for them, and they should sell. They should stock what they can sell is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and again, while books certainly exist under the top 300, I mean, something we haven't talked about in a while, the top 300 bottomed out at 5,049 units.
Mm-hmm.
If your book's not moving 5,000 units, it really barely exists.
On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, if I were publishing a comic, just me personally, yes, I'd love more sales, but 5,000 units isn't too bad.
Well, yes, it kind of depends on your, but when you're looking kind of nationally at the global, at the market, 5,000 units doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the difference between me, some guy in the middle of Texas saying,
yep,
hey, it might be fun to do a comic versus, you know, an actual publishing house.
Yes.
I mean, a good example of this is I'm going to go with rank 290.
Okay.
Mirror's Edge Exordium, number one. It's the first issue of a new miniseries based on the Mirror's Edge universe, which is video game stuff. 5,353 units from Dark Horse, based on a very popular video game. I think it took some kind of award a couple of years back when the first Mirror's Edge came out. Beautiful looking book. I actually picked this one up. I really enjoyed the stuff.
Okay.
I'm not a gamer, but 5,353 units from a publisher, Dark Horse. It's been around, what, 25, 30 years or something. A highly popular video game series. It's like, yeah, I could see somebody saying, well, maybe that's not that impressive.
Well, and to be fair, forget the 5,300 units as far as being impressive kind of on a global scale or not. Even for Dark Horse, the number five publisher, that 5,300 units isn't even a very big percentage of their 191,798 units.
Percentage of what a publisher did. That's an interesting concept. I want to go with that for a second. You've heard the whole 80-20 rule kind of a thing.
Yep.
80% of the value comes from 20% of the stuff. It's a rule of thumb. It's not like a universal constant or anything. But if we were to filter the list to Marvel, and specifically then filter that down to the six items that are Star Wars items. The top item on the list, Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens, Shattered Empire, damn, that's a long title, number one, with 208,883 units. Rank number two, Star Wars number nine, 135,817 units. Rank number five, Darth Vader number nine, 100,234 units. Rank number 11, Star Wars Lando number four, 61,541 units. Rank 20, Canon The Last Padawan, number 6, 45,402 units. And then down at rank 153, True Believers, Princess Leia number 1. This is just reprinting the first issue of Princess Leia. 14,013 units. That totals up to 5,600. Hang on.
Yeah, I was going to say 5,000 can't be right. I've got about 150,000 at least.
565,890. It's hard to read all these numbers. So 565,890 units out of the 2.7 million Marvel did. That's about 20%.
Yeah.
For six books.
Yep.
Six licensed books, one of which is technically something of a reprint.
Is it really a licensed book if you're licensing it to yourself?
Well, it depends. This is an existential question.
Okay.
Who is Marvel? Who is Disney? Who is Star Wars? Is Marvel at risk of losing this license? Probably not, unless they really goof up. And frankly, there's nowhere we could land that it would do better. So even if they totally screw it up, which they are not, they're doing great with it, they're not going to lose it. That having been said, it is conceivable a Disney property could go elsewhere. How do we know this? Because IDW is printing Disney comics.
Yes.
Uncle Scrooge, Mickey Mouse, that kind of stuff. And this was something that when those properties left Boom, everyone would say, well, of course they left Boom. They're going to Marvel. They didn't. So I don't think it's so much risky for Marvel to have all, 20% of their sales through Star Wars books because they're going to keep the property. It's more a matter of six books doing that much and not being based on any of their in-house properties.
Yeah.
That just seems a little weird. But they're doing well with it, so not like I'm complaining. It's just something that when I noticed that percentage, it struck me as odd for the top publisher that I think is doing fairly well these days overall. Even with the Secret Wars, miniseries and stuff versus the regular ongoing or whatever. I mean, they're in a state of flux right now, certainly, but not in a bad state of flux. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be interesting to see how this percentage plays out over the coming months, where we get not only all of these kinds of books, but annuals coming up, a special or two coming up, and that's going to be compared to all of the major number ones coming up from Marvel.
Yeah. And talking about the Disney books, quickly looking at the IDW of Disney books, they make up just under 35,000 units. So again, going back to that, for Marvel, as we just pointed out, Star Wars makes up 20%. If they added those Disney books, it would make up less than 1.5%.
Yeah, I guess what gets me with IDW these days is at one point they seem to have a really good balance of licensed properties and kind of in-house things.
And they've got nothing in-house anymore.
That's not true.
Oh, what did I miss?
First off, Danger Girl Renegades, their top-selling item. Its first issue did 20,217 units. Pretty good.
Is that really in-house?
That's a fair point. Yes and no. It may be technically, I don't think they're licensing it. I don't think they own it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Campbell owns it.
But it's still an original comic property.
Yes.
Not something that they bought the rights to hire a creative team to go do.
Yeah. But Campbell's only doing the covers, so at this point it's almost like he's licensed it to three other guys and letting IDW publish it.
True. But if we look at the lowest selling item for IDW on the list, it's Atomic Robo and the Ring of Fire number one.
Also owned by those guys.
Yes. So definitely a creator-owned book, 5,537 units. And yeah, that's the lowest selling for IDW in the top 300, but it's also a remarkably consistent book, and hopefully this gets the property out to more eyes than it was getting just through Red 5 Comics. Because Red 5 Comics, I think, did a great job with that book and all the other stuff they've done, but they're a small company. They don't have the market penetration that IDW has.
No, absolutely. But again, going back to kind of the IDW, I mean, it wasn't that long ago where there was at least a few in-house properties. Now there's, I don't see a single one.
Well, let's differentiate slightly between in-house properties and house-owned properties.
Okay, fair enough. There's nothing house-owned.
I'm trying to think what they had that definitely was house-owned.
I think Doberman was the last thing.
I'd have to go check the copyright on that to be sure.
Yeah, and that's true. That could have been creator-owned even then.
Because they've had a lot of good stuff, but a lot of it, like right now, they're doing I don't want to say gangbusters, but their strength right now is things like My Little Pony, Gem and the Holograms, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. A lot of these are kids' properties, or in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, some of that's kids, some of that's not.
And G.I. Joe, you could make the same argument.
Fair point, but it's, well, almost all of those properties, I don't know how old My Little Pony is, but a lot of those are properties from the 80s. So a nostalgia basis.
All of those that we just mentioned are at least from the 80s.
Including My Little Pony?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I just wasn't sure.
My sister had little My Little Ponies when I was a kid. Okay. It kind of disappeared for 20 years, but yes.
So, I mean, they're doing good stuff with, I don't want to say nostalgia-based properties, but time-tested.
Yes.
And out of those things, I'm reading Star Trek, reading Uncle Scrooge. I'm really not reading that, well, and Atomic Robo. I'm not reading that much from IDW these days, though.
Yeah, I'm actually reading quite a bit from them, but, you know, that has much more to do with how little I'm reading from everyone else these days.
Yeah, I find that my reading tends to surprisingly split roughly evenly three ways, Marvel, DC, and everybody else. And I don't know what leads to that, to be honest. One of the things we got on the forum this time around that I want to talk about, Spidey Saves the Day,
yep,
tossed out an interesting idea, wondering if annuals can be used to identify strengths or weaknesses of a book. And he was saying how the Batman annual sold about 80K consistently over 2 years. And he's wondering if that means there's about 80,000 pull list customers for Batman. Or regular customers who, whether they get it through a pull list or not, almost doesn't matter. Although, to a degree, I think there's a fundamental difference between somebody who picks up Batman every month and somebody who has the store pull a copy of Batman for them every month.
Yep.
If I were a store owner, I'd want the guy who wants it pulled, just because it seems like a bigger commitment. But Spidey Saves the Day was also commenting on how Green Lantern's annual had plunging numbers and was wondering if that would identify an opposite effect for customers just kind of abandoning the title. So what I did is just some really quick, ugly charts on Batman, Green Lantern. I went ahead and did Amazing Spider-Man as well. And I picked that one because it had the most annuals and the most data. It was a bigger data set to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And what I noticed is if I kind of line up where the monthly book is over time and where the annuals are over that same time, it kind of sort of correlates. And it's kind of sort of indicative, not necessarily at the same level, but the same slope and trend and spikes and whatnot. But it really comes down to you've got three or four data points versus 40 or 50 or 100 or something, you know. So, and with Amazing Spider-Man, it was one of the more tenuous connections of, well, it's sort of, I mean, really, I only had a handful of data points to go on. It kind of followed the slope, but I can't see anything looking at these things that I just kind of threw together. And again, not like I did a deep analysis on this, where looking at the annuals was any more insightful than just looking at how the book was doing to begin with.
Well, and forget the charting, because there's some discussion on the forum after that, anecdotally. How do you treat annuals? If you're buying the book, I'm assuming you buy the annual. If you're not, you don't? Or...
Oh, I drop things left, right, and center. You know me. I'm a bad example, Sam.
Okay, well...
I get the annuals.
Because I'm actually kind of in between. I'd say 90% of books that I'm reading, I get the annuals. But books I'm on the fence and teetering about, and particularly the annual feels like they just threw out a stock story for the character, I'll skip the annual. On the other hand, books I'm thinking about, I will give the annuals a shot. As Rowdy from Scrubs pointed out, that's interesting. You know, he kind of does the same thing, but, you know, then, you know, in that discussion went, well, yeah, but that seems like a bad way to test a book because usually it's a different creative team and...
Well, and a longer story. They've had more time in that issue to sell you on something versus you're going to get about maybe half the page count in a regular issue.
Yep. Also, you're going to get a full story, which you rarely get in the other issues as well.
Often, but not always. In many cases, they're using it to finish off a story arc or relaunch a new one. What I've generally found over the years is that the annuals sell less than the regular issues of the book. And for it to be 3/4 of the sales ballpark, not uncommon. And I'm not saying it's always that way or whatever, but it's almost uniformly less. Now, if it was one of those where you've got a book and the annual is doing as well or better than the regular on a consistent basis, that would intrigue me. I don't know what that would tell me, because clearly those people aren't engaged enough to be getting the book every month.
Well, and again, this goes back to what annuals are used for. I got to believe there was a point, some of that, you know, I'm assuming the Spider-Man marriage issue did better than the monthly book kind of surrounding it.
Oh, absolutely. And there were years at DC where they would do annual events, Marvel 2 for that matter.
I definitely remember the year 3s.
Mm-hmm.
And even the year 1s back in the 90s.
Or they did the alternate futures and stuff for DC.
And Marvel did an actual event thing almost in the annuals back kind of in that same era, as I remember.
They did a couple, and what they would do is they'd take a family of books, and you'd get like a 4-part story across their annuals.
Yeah.
Atlantis Attacks was done that way. Oh, I'm trying to think of some other examples. And this was, again, 80s, 90s era.
So I think that would obviously be kind of different than kind of just your average annual.
Well, yeah, and like you said, it comes down to what kind of annual is it? Is it a standalone, hey, check this out, or a story that just is important to the grand scheme of things but doesn't really fit in the monthly flow? Or is it something that is part of the monthly flow and it's like, hey, we're doing a 6-part story and here's the grand finale, or here's the extra size kickoff issue, or rarely it takes place in the middle of it, but that's happened once or twice, I suppose.
And again, like we pointed out with the Spider-Man issue, or giant size X-Men, or, you know, where they were almost anniversary or landmark type issues as well.
Well, the marriage one is an event issue of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, that certainly is of its own kind of thing. And you're right, that's going to sell just fundamentally different than a regular annual. So I think it's indicative of a certain level of commitment that some readers have over and above just getting it monthly. But I don't think you can really correlate that to this is how many people are getting it on a pull list or whatever. I would love to have some kind of data that indicated what percentage of these numbers were ordered to put into a pull list.
Yeah.
Because if there's a book that's two books that are selling neck and neck, one's got 100% pull list and the other's got zero, fundamentally different kinds of books. And I'd have to give some thought as to which I thought would be the better thing to have. You know, on the one hand, having a huge percentage of your sales be dedicated readers and stuff is awesome. But I do think there comes a point where if too much of your sales are pull list copies and not copies that make it out to the rack, that's really detrimental to a book in the long term, because people can't sample it. It's not on the rack.
Well, and that's been one of my main complaints with the pre-order market that we're in. Nothing gets sampled or explored. You're talking about what's coming out in 3 months. You're buying what's coming out in 3 months. You're.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what can be done about that.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's inherently bad, but I will agree that the focus on what's next versus what's now is inherently bad. But I don't think people are solely looking at just what's a couple of months out. I think they're looking too much at it. But part of that's just the necessity of the distribution cycle and whatnot.
Yep.
And if it could be magically cut down to instant feedback and, you know, you find out what's available the instant it hits the racks, but that's just, that wouldn't work for the retailers.
Well, and I got to tell you, as a Marvel Unlimited guy, getting those emails on whatever day it is, Tuesdays, I think, of, hey, here's what's going on, you know, here's what's new on Marvel Unlimited, I will flip through those and just kind of, you know, randomly read something that catches my eye that I used to do in stores. I don't do nearly as much in my stores as I used to, you know, and that's kind of an interesting, you know, I'm already a member. It's literally just fighting for my time.
I got a very interesting email today, and I've traded a few with these people, but I haven't read all the ones they've sent back. I got a little swamped later in the day. A website called Comic Blitz. They are essentially that Netflix for comics we were talking about. They're doing it for a dozen or two publishers and stuff. Valiant, Dynamite, I think, was one of them. Like I said, I haven't fully scoped out their website and whatnot. I haven't had time to dig into it. But it very much sounded like the sort of thing we were talking about of the Marvel Unlimited, but for other publishers. Now, I think their price was, and they just started up recently. I'm not sure how recently, though.
Looking at their website, $9.99 a month.
Yeah, $9.99 a month. They've got an app for the iPad, which does me no good.
Yeah, not an Android one.
And the questions I have, and that they, I believe, has answered, but I haven't had a chance to read that email yet. But basically, I was asking, how current is the stuff? Could, like, I cut over and stay current with Valiant or something through their app? And of course, are they going to do something like for the Surface, which I have, or, you know, what is their plan for adding publishers and going forward? Because that's the kind of platform that could fundamentally change the numbers we're looking at. Because if I could suddenly say, you know, for $10 a month, I could follow in real time these publishers, or even if it's a 6 month delay, like the Marvel Comics Unlimited stuff. It comes down to, do I have a guarantee of there would be enough issues every month to justify that $10 expense? $10 there, what is it for the Marvel Comics Unlimited a month these days?
I to be fair, I haven't checked a receipt or my credit card. It was $9.99 when I signed up, and I think it still is.
We'll say $10 a month. So $20 a month, suddenly you can read, I don't say everything from Marvel, because again, it's 6 months old, it's got this, that, and the other, but a hell of a lot from Marvel. And then this would cover a lot of the other publishers. And again, I'd love to see something like that for DC. I'd love to see something like that that would include a significantly high enough percentage of what I'm reading to be worth doing. Not to say I would necessarily cut out the physical comics at that point, but certainly it'd be tempting.
It's weird. I am starting to question my subscription. Not because I don't think I'm getting the value for it, but it's possible it could be cheaper for me to actually buy the physical copies, only because I have found I am reading older stuff that's available in nickel and quarter bins, and I could probably read just as much for $6 a month if I spent the time diving through, cheap bins at local stores.
Let's go with that for a bit, because if you look at the top of the list, the only $2.99 book near the top of the list is Walking Dead at rank number 9, 69,006 units. You've got to go a ways down to hit anything under $3.99. I think the next one is New Suicide Squad down at rank 47.
That is correct.
And
Or it's 47? Oh, yeah, I missed it. You're right. Next one I saw was 50 at Miss Marvel, but you're right.
yeah.
New Suicide Squad's at 47.
So let's say $4 as a benchmark. Okay? And because some of these other things are $4.99, $5.99, or what have you, but we'll say $4 just for simplicity. If you were to go to mycomicshop.com, possibly if you did this check over at Mile High Comics or whatever online back issue dealer you like, again, mycomicshop.com is my preferred one. You could probably find a lot of great things to read from past decades well under that $4 an issue price
Oh,
tag.
well, yeah, and like that's what I don't think. I just, I just read all of the Annihilation event on Marvel Unlimited, and it took me a month and a half to read kind of all of it, and I was realizing places like my comic shop, I could get most of that stuff for between 50 cents and a buck an issue, and I'm like, well, $15 for the month, I probably could have bought them all.
Yeah. It comes down to, do you want the physical copies or not? For some people, that's a plus. Sometimes it's a minus. Believe me, I've got enough comics to know it can be a minus.
Absolutely. The other thing is, I probably wouldn't have done it. It
Exactly.
was, it kind of caught
Convenience.
my eye. I picked up my tablet. I said, oh, let me see what's in Annihilation. Let me just start reading it. And I've done this before where I've gotten two or three issues in and went, hey, I don't care for this, and gone on to something else. In this case, I was really enjoying it, so I read them all. So, would I have ordered a bunch of stuff I ended up not really wanting if I did it the other way,
Or you may have really wanted it when you ordered it, but not so much by the time it came.
Exactly.
And this is the sort of thing I've really noticed having Netflix now, is there are times where I'm watching some stuff that I honestly I never would have watched otherwise. And not because it's bad or something like that, but because there wasn't enough urgency to watch to go get it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Netflix. One of the things I've discovered with Netflix, they've recently, after they kind of got rid of their contract with Epic, they just added a bunch of movies that are kind of 10 to 15 years old that were fairly popular when they came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just seen them, and I started kind of flipping through them and watching them. And some of them, what's interesting is I own almost all of them on DVD, in a few cases on Blu-ray.
The convenience factor, yeah.
Some of them I love. Some of them I've rewatched on Netflix and gone, why the heck did I actually buy this thing on disc?
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's a certain, and urgency is not quite the right word, but there's a barrier to entry, some kind of a threshold effort level.
Yep.
That, you know, maybe you wouldn't have read that, you wouldn't have watched that or whatever, if it wasn't just sitting right in front of you.
Exactly.
And I don't care how excited somebody may be about the Fight Club comic book or whatever. Are they excited enough to actually go out to the comic store?
Yep.
Or if they just happen to be on, you know, the Dark Horse app, Comixology, or wherever, it's like, hey, it's there, I'll read it. You know, there's a matter of putting the stuff in front of people that I think is a bit of a game changer with digital. And that's one of the things I think the print comics are really struggling with. And I think most publishers seem to have two, maybe three books that are just selling disproportionately better than the rest of their line. You know, you look at Marvel having a couple of books, and then there's about a 20,000, 25,000 unit gap before their next book.
Well, and that's funny. We might as well bring this up. At one point on a weekly comic spotlight, you and or Drew had mentioned the idea of, I wonder if a publisher like DC or Marvel just kind of, we're going to publish 50 books and we'll see what, you know, see how they do, you know, mm-hmm. kind of, they essentially have 50 open spots and they've just got to fill those spots with whatever. And so I kind of did a quick analysis of kind of what the average mean and some of those things are on the DC books. And I was shocked to find that the average DC book is selling 34,000 issues a month since Convergence. What is even more disturbing because of that average, and I charted 44 kind of series I found, there's actually only 19 that are selling at that average or higher, with Batman selling 3.8 times that average.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are 23 books that sell less than that average, including four or five that sell less than half of that average.
Well, and it was interesting to look at the spreadsheet you gave me and stuff, because I usually can look at the sales list in a given month and tell what should get canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And I phrase it that way because it's hard to tell what's going to be canceled. If for no other reason than I've got to take the list of everything, and normally for like DC, I'll say anything under about 20,000 is at risk. The time it takes to filter out, no, wait, they've already announced this is ending. Wait, this was a miniseries. Yep, this is gone. You know, that kind of a thing. It's hard to keep track of that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there are a couple that are not surprising. Prez number 4 is at 8,930 units. That's one of the lower ones you were mentioning. Yeah, that got cut short.
And for its total of 4 issues, it's averaging 15,000, which is 46% of DC's average sale.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, that's not the worst. Lobo's even worse, averaging 13,600 at 42% of their average. Also been canceled, I believe.
What I find surprising about that is it started at about 39,000 and the lowest it's done is little under 11,000.
Yes.
So it's one of those that is selling higher than the other one, mm-hmm. but granted, Prez
it started
just,
lower.
Yeah.
It didn't have the precipitous drop.
Yeah, because Prez starting at... Prez only started at 28,000, but it's had fewer issues to kind of do that drop, too.
Well, and I only did 4 issues. I only did Since Convergence on all of these.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, you know, just to give you an idea, let me take a quick look and filter this.
But that actually benefited Prez because it had a first issue in those 4.
Exactly.
But the one that amazes me is the third or fourth from the bottom of your list, and one of the lowest ones that hasn't been canceled is Omega Man, and that's been canceled and been uncanceled.
Yes, averaging about 55% of DC's average.
And the fourth issue, 11,301 units. That is not worth keeping around till issue 12.
Nope.
I honestly don't care what the story arc is in terms of should it be kept around for that purpose or not. DC's got to pay writer, penciler, inker, letterer, colorist. That's five mouths to feed, plus an assistant editor, a junior assistant editor, a senior junior assistant editor, you know, whatever their editorial staff is. They've got a bunch of those. Those are important mouths to feed. They're hungry people, too. But the bottom line is I can't imagine they're making a profit on this book.
Yeah, well, here's what I discovered. There are 14 books that average less than 75% of the average.
Mm-hmm.
And those are Catwoman, Dr. Fate, Justice League United, Justice League 3001, Bizarro, Gotham Academy, Midnighter, Batmite, All-Star Section 8, Doomed, Omega Men, Gotham by Midnight, Prez and Lobo. Those all average less than 75% of kind of the average.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine any of those books lasting too much longer. A bunch of them have already been listed as canceled. Another group of them were six-issue miniseries to begin with. Midnighter, Catwoman, and Dr. Fate and Justice League 3001 are kind of the other four I would expect something to happen to fairly soon.
Midnighter, certainly. It's below 15,000.
Yeah, Midnighter.
Dr. Fate, 16,000 or whatever. I would just still in that sales. I would expect that too. Catwoman's currently above 21,500, although just barely.
Just barely.
So I don't think it's at the point now that it's worth canceling. But
what about Justice League 3001?
Let me see where that is on the monthly list.
Yeah, let me find that.
Oh, yeah, wow. That one's 16,700. Yeah. Yeah, that one. That one I would get rid of. Martian Manhunter I would get rid of. To me, the Justice League United, which is, I think, one of the higher selling of the ones they canceled, anything almost below that, that is a mainstream DC Universe book.
But again, if you look at the average, Justice League United is above books like Midnighter and Justice League 3001.
And that's why I'm saying anything below it should conceivably get axed.
On average, Martian Manhunter actually is, I wouldn't say significantly above, but it's above more books like Catwoman, Secret Six, and even Sinestro.
But I think the reason for that is it's only had four issues out.
It's only, yeah.
And you're doing a four-issue average.
Yes,
so you're
absolutely
still counting that 36,581 of the first issue.
And to be fair, it's a four-issue average with a blended mean that it's not quite an average, but yes, it's close.
The bottom line is, you look at these numbers in the next few months, and the next month it's going to be significantly further down, mm-hmm, simply because that high-selling first issue, relatively high-selling first issue, let me be clear on that,
yep,
isn't going to get factored in.
Absolutely.
That right there drops it below that 75% or whatever.
And I got to tell you, the other one, I was shocked to see just how low it kind of was on this list. And you can say it's consistent and it's gone up and down. Green Arrow.
I could say that it's consistent, but I would not.
Well, but it's up and down. It's 29,000, 24,000, 29,000, this month back to 25,000.
That book has such an identity crisis, it is not even funny.
Yeah, it was weird. Once I kind of did the average and factored in the means and some other things and just kind of sorted the list, I was shocked how low Green Arrow was.
Yeah, that's one that, by and large, recently has been hovering close enough to the 20,000 that, yeah, if I were at DC, I would have that perpetually on my consideration for cancellation. Not that it would get canceled, but I'd keep a close eye on that book.
And Convergence seemed to have helped it. You know, it was 20,009, 20,002, 19,006, 19,007. And then Convergence happened, and again, 29, 24, 29, 25. So Convergence actually helped it.
Well, I think it was more a matter of the direction they went after Convergence than Convergence itself. But it came out of that break well.
Yeah.
But that's
still fluctuating crazy.
Well, because it doesn't know what it is. It's not sure if it is Green Arrow or if it's based on the Arrow TV series.
Yeah.
Or following the lead thereof, I should say. Obviously, it's not based on it. TV series is based on it. But with...
And the TV show came back in October.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this book does next month. Will it be back down to 25, or will it be another month like this near, or like last month, back up near 30?
Well, and I think the TV show made a very interesting decision story-wise that could benefit the Green Arrow comic.
I actually agree with you.
I don't know if we want to get into that or not. No. But one thing that is worth noticing is down at rank 224 is Arrow Season 2, the final issue of that. At 8,124 units, this was a digital first, so it's not all the sales, just the print sales here. But every time I see, and there was a article, I think it was over on Newsarama not that long ago, of how these TV shows are really beefing up sales of comics and such. And it's like, you know, people are watching these things and getting more excited about comics. Guaranteed. No question in my mind whatsoever on that. But I am not seeing any correlation, for the most part, that having a TV show will increase sales of a comic. Certainly there are cases where it certainly didn't hurt, and it definitely helped Walking Dead. Although Walking Dead had that upward trajectory clearly established for years before the show.
Yes, it just got a bump.
Yeah. But I'm not seeing any sign that the Arrow TV show has significantly helped the Green Arrow comic, or the Flash TV show has really influenced the sales of Flash. And again, not that people aren't getting excited, not that people aren't going into the store saying, hey, I watched the show, can you point me towards? That definitely happens. It's just not happening in big enough numbers to compensate for the standard attrition, or in some case, the downright erosion of sales.
Well, and I think to be fair, Flash and Green Arrow had the best chances of being helped. Those are big name kind of frontline A-list characters to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
A book like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I know you and Drew reviewed at least that one book.
Mm-hmm.
That TV show has less of a chance, I think, of helping that book even.
It's funny because that book is very much in the vein of that TV show.
No, I know. But a perfect example. We're getting the spinoff of Arrow and Flash. In theory, if they launch a Rip Hunter out of that, I don't think that book is going to sell great just because it has a TV show, even if the show is extremely popular, just because Rip Hunter is not the Arrow or Flash to begin with.
Well, and there's also the difference between being a lead character or the title character.
Yes.
If they did a Legends of Tomorrow book featuring those characters, it might do okay, but I certainly don't think the TV show would be the cause of it.
Exactly.
I mean, people would be interested in Firestorm, Hawk Girl, you know, and those Black or White Canary, whatever, the various characters.
But to be fair, most of those characters have had books fairly recently that weren't all that successful.
Well, one of the discussions Drew and I had on the Weekly Comic Spotlight we recorded the other day, we were talking about the Doctor Strange book that just launched. And I was saying how there's really, you know, A-list, B-list, C-list type characters. And the way I was defining it in that context was A-list characters are those that have a couple of books going most of the time. Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, those kinds of people. B-list characters are the ones that usually have an ongoing book, but just the one. Aquaman, Flash, trying to think of some other perennial examples of
well,
that.
Green Arrow.
But Green Arrow is a great example, yeah.
Arguably most of the rest of your Avengers.
Yeah.
You know, Thor, Iron Man, Cap.
Exactly. Then you got the C-list. Those that at one point were either A or B or maybe not, but have had titles. Have had titles that may have even lasted a good couple of years. But then lost them. Got them again, lost them again, got them again, lost them again. Martian Manhunter falls into this category. Firestorm, Hawkman. I mean, you could argue over Marvel, Hawkeye, Iron Fist, Moon Knight, Doctor Strange. And characters fluctuate in and out of these ranges. I mean, at one point, I would not have considered Catwoman necessarily a B-list character, but she's pretty much had an ongoing book for 2 decades now, thereabouts. That's pretty impressive.
Remind me about Catwoman. I want to come back to that. It ties into this discussion, but not quite now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But, I mean, you've got some of these characters that they just keep trying to make stick. And there's nothing wrong with these characters. It's a matter of finding the right creative team with the right take at the right time and making them stick.
Yeah.
You were going to say about...
Do you think the television version of Catwoman currently on the air on the show Gotham potentially is a hindrance to that book?
No. Okay. Now, keep in mind, I'm still working my way through the first season.
Well, I'm not going to say anything that's amazingly revolutionary or spoilery here, but here's what I'll say. Catwoman that we've seen in the book, the one that's had a series for going on 10, 15 years, is a sophisticated adult, a thief, a do-gooder, a little bit of a rogue, potentially a romantic interest for an adult Bruce Wayne, a nuanced adult character. The current version on the current television series is clearly a child. Is she a kind of a streetwise child? Sure, but still clearly a child.
But
very
not
different.
Yeah, not anything like any of the adult Catwoman we've seen.
Exactly.
Be it the one who can work her way through the mob underground type stuff.
Yep.
Or the prowling, cat burglar type, or the sophisticated hanging with the elite in Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's any hindrance to the Catwoman book, and no more so than having a young Bruce Wayne is hurting the Batman book. If anything, I think they've made that Catwoman character, or the young version of her, interesting and fun to watch. And it's as much the what will she become versus what she is now.
Yeah.
I think that's a better live-action depiction of Catwoman than arguably we're getting with Black Canary over an Arrow.
Yes, and again, it's a long time ago, but the Eartha Kitt, Julie Newmar Catwoman, again, very similar to the one we're kind of more used to in the comic books.
Yeah. I think it's important, though, for the publishers, the people doing the TV shows, and us as readers to understand how some of these characters are similar to, or in some cases, flat out different from, between the comics and the TV stuff. Because there comes a point where more people are going to be familiar with the TV show version than the comic book version. And anyone who's watching these TV shows and saying, I should get into comics, if they can't find what they're liking in the TV show in the comic, that's problematic.
Yeah.
And frankly, not all that surprising. Which is part of the reason I like the S.H.I.E.L.D. book, is it is clearly set in the Marvel Universe, but it is also clearly in the vein of the TV show. The Coulson in the comics feels like the Coulson from the TV show. He talks the same. He acts the same.
Is he drawn to look a little bit like Clark?
Yeah. Not like it's a dead ring or whatever, but it looks like him. It's recognizable as him, I guess, is the way to put it. Same with all the other characters they've done. And it's fun to see them interacting with characters you just aren't going to be able to show on the TV show. One of the more recent issues had Howard the Duck. I thought that was a lot of fun. There are certain books that when they're based on when they're featuring a character that's been in a live action show or animated show, somewhere where I've heard the voice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I hear the voice when I'm reading the book. Sometimes I don't. And to me, it's a question almost of how well did they kind of, is my mind saying they're the same character or not?
And sometimes it just takes years to change that.
Yeah.
Catwoman's a perfect example. I heard Julie Newmar for decades. I don't anymore, but, for the first 15 years I read that character, I absolutely did.
You know, it's funny, with Catwoman, with Batman, a couple of those characters, I don't hear a particular voice. But part of it is some of those have been done by so many different actors and voice actors.
Well, and I've missed it, but I know I've got friends, particularly ones that are slightly younger than me, that Kevin Conroy is the voice of Batman.
I was going to say, if I had to pick a voice to hear for Batman, it would probably be Kevin Conroy.
Yeah.
The guy just did an amazing job, and still does. It's just how many of these things are going to get supplanted in the comics by the derivative version from the TV shows and such. I mean, to me, that's always an important question. But then the other thing going on right now with Marvel is, I mean, they're doing pretty well with a lot of these, Secret War tie-ins and whatnot. But there's coming a point where they got a little bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card going into Secret Wars, where certain books just kind of ended without necessarily resolving. I've had a feel some of the Secret Wars miniseries have ended particularly well. Others just, I guess it's time for Secret Wars to end. Whether Secret Wars is actually the miniseries over or not yet, it's another matter. But I've also started reading a couple of the first issues of some of these books and stuff. And I'm thinking we're going to be having a couple of months as these things get rolled out where, man, the top of the list is going to get dominated by Marvel. I'm also expecting to see a lot of people claiming, wow, resurgence in sales, you know, we're looking great, things are better now. But it's all the number ones. And then, you know, as the sales drop in half or whatever for the second issues and again, you know, for the third or what have you, and not half again, but you know what I mean. It's, oh, what happened? We're in for potentially a big roller coaster ride the next few months.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of big roller coaster rides, something else that came up on the forums and I had kind of wondered about anyways, DC chose not to do a September event this year.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I was surprised by that.
And so I just wanted to take a look at, you know, last year, this month, September of last year, was a $13.8 million month for DC.
Well, what we had last year was the Futures End stuff.
Yes. So we had, well, you had a September event still.
Yes, but we've had a couple of different types of September events.
We have.
This was the first successful, I'm going to say, 3D, 2D cover one. Because the previous year, they had to allocate.
Yes.
This time, in 2014, they did not.
That is true.
So we had most of the, I think we had, let me double check this real quick.
We had almost the entire DC catalog on the list twice.
We had 41 3D covers and... we had 38 2D covers.
Yeah.
And I think there were only 41 to be had for the 3D. And of course, almost every time the 3D cover sold better. I'd have to go check my notes for if there were one or two that didn't work that way.
There was a couple that almost died. I remember having that discussion.
Yeah.
And they were towards the bottom anyways.
But with Convergence having been so recently... and not having had a time to finish a full six-issue story arc on stuff, they were kind of in the position they couldn't do a September event.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate. I think they would have been better off if they could have pushed back the move for, you know, later in the year and had it be an August-September kind of a time frame. But that wouldn't have worked for a number of reasons. Probably what their the leases were and stuff on the building, but also it would have hit during convention season and that would have been challenging it at best, just for the people moving. But not having any kind of a big draw in September certainly, I think, was a factor in, you know, just how the sales were.
Well, and just looking quickly back the last 2 years, last year DC did 3.6 million units. The year before, 3.9 million units.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 1.8 million units.
Well, and this September was frankly a weak month, one of the weakest we've had in, I think, about 18 months.
Yeah.
In terms of units and such like that. And I'm expecting it to appear to bounce back in the next month or two as we get a bunch of first issues and such. But I think that's going to be more of an illusion than an actual recovery or resurgence. And I think with DC, particularly in September, the 3D, 2D covers the last 2 years, the zero issues and stuff like that, they had gone to the well too many times and successfully gotten people to sample stuff. But frankly, I didn't feel that the audience generally felt they had the goods. You know, I think Marvel's had a lot of people sampling a lot of things with Secret Wars. I think they've been telling good enough stories that when they're coming out of Secret Wars, they're going to have some success. Not that they're having lack of success to begin with.
I absolutely agree. I think the biggest problem coming out of Secret Wars is if you have been sampling and enjoying whatever the new status quo is, possibly could be nothing like whatever you've been enjoying.
I think it will be different. I don't think it'll be nothing like. If you liked 1872, check out Red Wolf. If you liked Squadron Sinister, check out Squadron Supreme. Is it going to be exactly like it? Absolutely not. Is it going to be similar enough? Yeah. Now, if you're into the X-books... they were all over the place for the Secret Wars stuff, and I'm not really sure yet where they're going post-Secret Wars. I got a few inklings here and there, but I'll be honest, I don't spend much time reading the solicitation blurbs in the Marvel previews, just because I'm pretty much getting all the books anyways. It doesn't matter what they say.
Yeah.
But you look at how, as we're getting out of the top 20 here this month, we're around 45,000 units. That's not going to be the case next month with all the number ones. I think we're going to have a much heavier stuff at the top, a lot more things at or around the 100,000 mark. But I also think come 2-3 months from now, Marvel's going to be back in the same boat of having a lot of those sales just evaporated pretty quickly. And I hope that's not the case, but typically splash for the first issue, drop by half, drop by another 20% or whatever after that. If they can't curb that, let me clarify. Some of that's happening because they promote the first issue so much with variant covers, all this kind of a stuff. And it's not the drop that's the problem. It's what the sales drop to that is the problem. If you had something that dropped in half and a half yet again, yet it's still selling over the 100,000 mark, you're doing okay.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that. When you sell 1 million issues of Star Wars the first month, sure, you're going to lose 90%, but you're still doing fine.
Yep, but that's typically not what's happening.
Yes. When you sell 130 and you lose half twice, now you're in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, again, how we're seeing some of these things at the bottom that have just really kind of lost all their steam so quickly. I'm also uncertain how often we're going to be seeing relaunches over at Marvel. We're getting to the point where we're about to see another first issue of Silk, A-Force, Spider-Woman, a bunch of stuff for the second time this year. And I am uncertain if this is the sign of something, of a new trend of kind of the season mentality that we've been hearing, frankly, a decent amount of in interviews, in text pieces in the back of books, letter pages, stuff like that. And if Marvel decides, hey, end of a story arc, start a new volume, that's their prerogative. But if they're going to do that, I would like for them to stop having the first letter page of a book saying, hey, we've got this great new title, I'm glad you're enjoying it, followed by 5 issues later of, yes, it's been the end of a long and exciting run, my life as a creator has been forever changed, you know, whatever they usually say.
Yeah.
When I was reading, I think it was Black Widow 20, and they were kind of congratulating themselves on what a long run they've had. I'm like, really? A year and a half? 20 issues or whatever? It's, yeah. It was a good run, don't get me wrong, I liked it, but focus more on telling the story than telling me how you're telling the story or having told the story or what have you.
Yeah, see, it's interesting you chose the list of books you rattled off. Those books turning like that, I don't... It's the fact that we're getting a new Hulk, a new Iron Man, a new Spider-Man, a new Thor every year that's much more bothersome to me
than,
again, those C-list characters.
Let me harp a little on the terminology you just did. Because we're getting an actual new Hulk.
Fair enough. You're
different
you
character.
Are right. Yeah,
we got a new Thor. We're not getting a new Iron Man. Iron Man's one of those that I think they used the get out of jail free card a few times on. The what they set up coming out of Axis just kind of went away. Which was one of the other ones you mentioned. Daredevil, again.
Well, Daredevil, I kind of put. My point is the core Avengers and Spider-Man, those are the guys that getting the new number ones every year bothers me much more than books that essentially 20 years ago wouldn't have gotten more than a miniseries a year anyways.
Why that distinction?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a personal thing. I'm used to holding Spider-Man 300-500 in my hands. I'm not used to, you know, I don't ever remember having a Spider-Woman or a Silk 200-300 in my hands.
Because they never went that high, certainly.
Exactly. Therefore, it doesn't bother me with them as much.
Yeah, I guess. It was funny because one of the comments somebody made after our last episode was how I had mentioned that S.H.I.E.L.D. and Groot were the only ongoing books.
And then they said, yeah, but they're actually relaunching them too.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, isn't that what it means to be an ongoing? It's just an immediate restart. The whole concept of an ongoing book, I think, is changed, is evaporated to a degree. And I don't mean to downplay things like The Walking Dead that have actually gone for 146 issues the hard way, by numbering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc.
Well, and I'll give it's funny, you look at the books that are consistently at the top of the list. Batman got its one renumber. Walking Dead still hasn't had it and hopefully won't.
Uh-huh.
Spider-Man tends to hang around that top 10. It's the book that's most consistently up there that's kind of been through this mill.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is something to be said for the fact that, you know, leaving books alone might help.
I certainly think so, and I think there's a certain aspect of cut and run over at Marvel in terms of where they leave some of the storylines, particularly coming in and going out of Secret Wars. But I would be hard-pressed. I think I could count a couple of times where certain storylines for certain characters like Iron Man, they just kind of said, yeah, we're done with that. We're going in this direction. And almost inexplicably or really awkwardly said, you know, well, this is how come he's no longer the way he was. He's this way now.
Completely erasing his memory and then giving it back to him.
Or Teen Tony, or again, the Superior Iron Man just kind of stopped and now we're back to Invincible. And, you know, that's fine, but they've done enough of that sort of thing that their continuity is a bit more frayed at the edges than DC's. And DC's done some pretty hardcore reboots.
Yeah.
I would certainly consider Crisis on Infinite Earth a major reboot, and I would consider New 52.
Not Zero Hour.
No.
Okay.
That one had a crisis in time and things were pulled forward, but I didn't feel coming out of that, people's backstories totally evaporated.
Okay. And same thing, obviously, with the other one where they jumped, Infinite Crisis?
Yeah. That didn't seem to... frankly, really connect. Infinite Crisis, that was when they brought back the multiverse. I'm confusing it with Final Crisis, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah, Final Crisis didn't seem to connect to anything because nobody figured out what it was about.
Infinite Crisis happened in continuity and kind of things kept moving forward.
Well, they jumped ahead a year, which is why we got 52.
Well, yeah, jumping ahead a year is not a big deal. It's not like people's backstory changed. It's just we didn't see everything.
Yeah.
It's different to have that than suddenly two characters who have... had many adventures together, you read a book and it's like, who are you? Really? You don't remember.
And isn't Marvel doing something similar? Aren't they taking a time jump after Civil War?
I believe it's like 8 months later.
Do you know if they have anything like a 52 plan where they're going to tell a story of what happened in that time immediately?
I do not know.
Okay. You haven't seen anything like that?
Haven't seen, haven't looked. Maybe they can have John Byrne come back and do a lost generation kind of a book. Oh, wait, he's done that. Which was actually referenced in something I was reading recently. I don't remember what, though. See, what else do we have in the sales figures that...
Well, I was going to say is I was going to take... We've talked about Marvel. We've talked about DC quite a bit. Particularly, let's filter those two out.
Okie doke.
And let's look at some of the other interesting ones. At rank 23, Stand on Guard number 3, selling at 44,000. I mean, still down, but that's still a solid, solid selling book for Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Fight Club number 2, I believe issue 5 is the final one, or is it 6?
I was thinking that was 6 issues, but I do not recall.
Again, still over 40,000 at 40,446, doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
The one I kind of want to talk about is rank 66.
Ah, Archie.
Archie number 3 down to 27,733. Not a huge drop from issues 2's 30,000, but obviously nowhere near that 104,000 they got on issue 1.
4 is going to be a very telling issue because not only is that the first time that orders could be based off of how people have reacted to the first issue, although that's even fairly tight right there. But it's also going to be the first issue.
New creative team.
New artist.
Yeah.
And I got to say, Mark Waid's really doing a great job on Archie.
Is he?
I'm loving it.
Okay.
That
gives me hope. Maybe I'll check it out.
I felt the first issue had a very kind of heavy Saved by the Bell kind of a vibe. And it still got that a little later, but he's just telling some good stories.
Good.
He gets the character and gets how to make the character work in the modern age.
But they haven't... Please tell me the Riverdale kids haven't lost their innocence and all-agedness.
They have not.
Good.
It's little bit more sophisticated storytelling, but it's something that...
I don't mind more sophisticated, but after doing kind of that zombie version of Archie and some of that other stuff, I was a little worried they were going to go way off the deep end.
I don't recall reading anything in the 3 issues that made me feel it was not still all-ages.
Beautiful. Maybe I'll have to check that out then.
I was... Mark Waid is, I think, one of the most talented writers out there in many respects. and his ability to take a 75-year-old property and really tell just a fun story, teen drama type stuff, and be true to the characters yet update the characters. It would not surprise me if this stays much higher than how Archie had been doing prior. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, good. Couple other things that pop out. Book of Death from Valiant, still at 25,000, still sliding. But at this point, 20,000 is a really good number for Valiant, particularly when you look at where some of the rest of their books are.
Well, and I think this one's still being propped up by Book of Death, Legend of the Geomancer.
Yeah, which is still possible.
And I've been reading the Legend of the Geomancer, and not only is it hideously overpriced, I felt the third issue was actually kind of short. It was like 16, 18 pages or something, which on the one hand, I think it was about 16, actually. I'd have to double check. One hand, not so bad. On the other hand, I paid $15 for it.
Yeah.
So kind of annoying. I think Valiant needs to make sure that they're not, their readers aren't getting upset with them on some of this stuff.
Yeah. What else is interesting? The Doctor Who books, the fourth Doctor, number four, actually took a little bump in sales, which seems like a good thing at 14,583 at rank 145.
One of the things I found disappointing was the one above it, Doctor Who, the Four Doctors. And what frustrated me with that is big delay on that last issue of a couple of weeks. It was a weekly book, and it went 3 weeks between four and five.
Yeah.
So I don't know what didn't work there, but that was unfortunate. And I was expecting, based on the cover art I'd seen, that the War Doctor was going to play a part in that and didn't seem to. So I think they need to get their ducks a little bit more in a row when they do another miniseries like this. But I think they're doing a pretty good job of having the concurrent Doctor Who books going. And I mean, they're not burning up the charts or whatever, but they're doing all right.
They're doing well. I wanted to ask you about rank 152, because I know you read most of these.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the decision to publish two Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor books concurrently?
They're not. They ended the one and started the next.
So 15's the end and then 1's the new one?
Yeah. Down at rank 181, Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, number 15, 10,994 units, season finale. So they're going for the season approach.
Gotcha.
And it's funny because you could almost do this as, you know, season 8.5 or, you know, what have you sort of a deal. I'm looking forward to them playing around with some of the other Doctors and such, and maybe bringing in some of the other characters in that universe.
Yeah.
Again, love to see them do Torchwood, a Sarah Jane Adventures, Class, once that gets started. So we'll see.
We'll have to see. Speaking of Titan, way down at rank 305, Blacklist number 3. That's a licensed property that doesn't seem to be doing as well for them.
I'm not surprised by that, because I think, and granted, I've only watched the first 3 episodes of The Blacklist. I'm way behind. I think part of the charm of the show is James Spader.
I absolutely agree.
You take him out, and you've still got the character, but not the charisma, not the actor. It's something that is hard to translate well to the printed page, I think.
Well, I think it's hard to translate that particular personality. I do think the concept of kind of the espionage, you know, James Bond meets modern terrorists, meets a kind of a rogue hero to begin with, I think works just fine. But like you said, Spader's personality is such a part of that character, it's a little harder to do.
It would be like doing a Mork and Mindy comic book.
Yeah.
it's Mork, but it's not Robin Williams.
Yeah.
That having been said, I'd still probably buy such a thing.
See, there is something I would buy. let's see. What else is on here is interesting? Bloodshot getting a boost in its 6th issue. Was that the final of that series?
I don't think so, but it's kind of hard to keep track of some of the stuff from Valiant because the titles come and go.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a long-term, like, 2-year, 3-year plan for Bloodshot. but depending how the sales go, we may see it under different titles or, you know, spaced out somehow.
Yeah. Valiant actually got a couple of bumps. They've got a bunch of books kind of between 7,000 and 10,000. The ones that are kind of scary are Unity down at 5,300, Imperium at 6,200, Ivar Timewalker at 6,300, not doing quite as well.
Well, they've already announced that Unity is ending at 25, I believe.
Okay.
They're, I believe, bringing back Archer and Armstrong, and they've got a movie deal for a couple of movies.
Yep.
With Harbinger, with Bloodshot and such. And when those come out, it's a question of, do the books benefit from that or not? And they stand a chance of benefiting more so than your average Marvel or DC kind of a property. Because there'd be a pretty go-to, oh, you like the movie, read this.
Yeah.
Versus, oh, you like Gotham, well, what should you read right now?
That'll be next month. We'll get the new Eternal next month, right?
Think so. Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah, I just read it, so.
Oh, then yes.
Came out yesterday, so.
Ah, haven't gotten those books yet.
Again, speaking of Harbinger, the Book of Death, Fall of Harbinger, number one. Pretty good debut for Valiant these days at 11,000, just barely over.
But it's a one-shot.
Oh, it's okay, so it's not really back?
No, this the Book of Death, Fall of, they've been doing a one for Exo, one for Ninjak, one for Harbinger, and I forget who the other one's going to be.
That's right. This came up last month.
This all comes down to, it's all around their Book of Death kind of quasi-event thing. I really don't know that they should have done that kind of an event. It's something that telling, oh, this is how these characters are going to eventually kick the bucket, you know, decades from now or whatever. Don't really care yet. And you're kind of potentially writing, I don't say writing yourself into a corner, but it's like, why lock that down?
I think nothing. Anything else you find particularly interesting?
We had a couple of things that were some major drops. Red Sonja Conan number 2 dropped 58%. Not sure what was up with that. X-Files season 11 number 2 dropped 53%. One of the more easily explainable drops was The Shadow down at rank 272, where the second issue dropped by 57%. But the first issue was priced at $1. The second issue was priced at $3.99. So I would expect that kind of a drop, both between a first and second issue, and because of the difference in the price.
Speaking of drops and raises, is rank 133, Bob's Burgers number 3, that 27% gain, is that legit? And the only reason I bring this up is when I look at the history, I see a couple of different things, so I'm not sure.
Unless they did 2 first issues this year.
No. This is the third issue of a book series that's only had 3 issues ever. Okay, so it's up, which is good. That means maybe it's a little more popular than retailers were expecting.
Well, it went from 25,700 to 12,500 and then 15,900.
Back to 15, yeah.
That seems odd.
It does seem odd, particularly since it's an issue 3, not issue 4.
Yeah. I would have to check when issues 2 and 3 came out, because it would be July, August, September. It doesn't have time for that kind of a bump normally.
Yeah.
And I don't have the solicitation blurb for that third issue.
Yeah.
For some reason, they're just in July. There's a lot of items I don't have solicitation blurbs from my source data, and I'm not sure what's up with that. Sometimes that explains.
Like I said, I'm enjoying this book. I enjoy the show. Like I said, seems to have a bit of a cult following. I hope it continues to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Will Eisner's The Spirit has leveled off, but I'm still shocked that it's as low as it is.
I read that first issue and it just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I...
But to level off at that point, third issue, around what?
7,200.
Yeah, 7,200. Not too surprising in so much as I think people, by and large, if they were picking it up, they knew what to expect.
Yeah. And The Shadow's kind of just below it. And again, you already talked about that drop with the dollar.
Yeah, anytime you've got that kind of a price difference. But I think it's smart to start a book at a really low introductory price like that and then, try to get people on board with that first issue.
Yeah.
It often doesn't seem to pan out, but I still think it's the right choice. Just because anything you can do to get people to read that first issue, if they don't read the first issue, they're not going to read the second issue. Flip side, you give it to them at a hell of a deal, they're not going to want to pay the full price for the next issue. So how do you get them to buy that first issue without literally devaluing it in some sense? That's a tough one.
What else is interesting? Rank 211, Lumberjanes from Boom Studios. Up again, this book seems to be very consistent, particularly after about issue 6.
Yes.
It kind of leveled off just under 10,000, got as low as 85, and is now kind of climbing its way back towards 10,000.
Going to say next time I would expect it to be back around the 8,500.
Okay.
I think this is a blip. I don't think this is a climb.
Okay.
But we'll find out next time. I could be totally mistaken.
Issue 14 was 82. 15 was 85, 16 was 85.9, 17 was 85.6, and now 18 is 9.
You look at where it's been averaging since issue 10, though.
Yeah.
And it's right around that 8,500-ish.
Yes, I agree. But the 82s and 83s and 84s seem to have been 6 months ago, and they've recovered from that.
Yeah. Again, more or less leveled off.
Yeah.
You never have a book that just hits a point and boom, it's rock steady there.
I agree.
There have been a couple where the fluctuation is literally in the few dozen units area, which is, I think, phenomenal. But those books are kind of few and far between. Typically, again, we're seeing a percentage or a couple loss every time.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. There was a couple of loss every time for 3 or 4 months, and now there's been a couple of gain every time for 3 or 4 months minus last month,
which
was basically flat.
So. And some of this could just be explained by some customers not going to their store every month or something.
Yep.
And therefore somebody, you know, doing the cycle sheet or the equivalent with their point of sale system and saying, well, got an extra copy this time, so let's throttle back a copy.
Yeah. But again, seems to be doing well, you know. I know that book got some critical acclaim, I guess is what I'll say.
Well, it's the kind of book that Boom and some of these other publishers are having a lot of success with. Not your typical sci-fi, fantasy, superhero kind of a thing, necessarily. It's more, again, all ages I put it in a similar broad category as the Adventure Time, the G.I. Joe, the Transformers, that kind of a stuff. It's a good, solid entertainment that's not geared towards the typical Marvel DC comic geek.
Yeah.
I say that as a typical Marvel DC comic geek or a hardcore one of them. Take your pick. And I think these publishers carving out that kind of a niche versus trying to go necessarily head to head with Marvel and DC makes a lot of sense. You know, find an area you can compete at and be highly successful in. But I do think there's a couple of publishers still trying to find themselves.
Yeah.
Boom, to a degree, because at one point it had a number of what I consider to be kind of in-house or house-owned type properties. It's looking again like we mentioned earlier, IDW is very much a licensed heavy publisher. Nice thing. They've got it from a ton of different licensees, so it's not like they're too heavily vested in one camp. That was pretty much one of the many things that was the downfall of Devil's Due back in the day. Is it was so heavy in the Hasbro or the G.I. Joe Transformers type stuff that when they lost that license, that really took the wind out of their sail.
Yeah, and that was Hasbro. Yeah. Speaking of licensed properties, just because I'm interested, as we record this, it is 6 days until the day Marty McFly arrived in the year 2015. Have you seen anyone doing a book for that?
Yes.
Does anyone have that license?
IDW. Matter of fact, that should come out on the 21st.
Beautiful. On that day.
On that day. And Drew and I are going to be reviewing that comic on the following Weekly Comic Spotlight.
Beautiful.
But just so people can make it through that day, because I know what a traumatic event that day is going to be for fans of the show, the future is here. My sister and I have recorded an episode that goes up that day on the films.
Oh, beautiful. That will be fun.
Those are three of my favorite time travel films.
I'm right there with you.
And they hold up well. So we pulled out the DVDs a while back, a week or two back, and watched them. And of course, I had to go order the Blu-ray set for the 30th anniversary because they're also going to have the cartoon and stuff. It's like, yeah.
So did I. Yeah, that complete one with the, yes, with all the cartoons and the out of time documentary and yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, it's funny. My comic shop is within about two blocks of what was Doc Brown's workshop.
Mm.
And I know there is a group of local fans here in the L.A. area meeting at that Burger King that day as well, which was right in front of Doc Brown's workshop where he essentially surfs behind the Jeep that Bob Gale is driving.
Yeah, when Marty comes out and stuff.
Yep.
And
like I said, that's within blocks of my comic shop that day anyways. So.
I was reading something last day or two where Christopher Lloyd was saying he would definitely be up for doing another one.
It seems like it might happen.
I hope so. I certainly don't want to see them reboot the franchise because they had such a great cast. Everything worked on those films. You don't need to fix it. But you need to do more.
The issue is how much can Michael do and can you do it without him as the star?
Well, you do the typical kind of sequel reversal. Doc is the guy doing all the stuff, or his kids in this case. Marty is kind of the uncle, the that kind of a figure, if you will.
Apparently, from what Zemeckis has said, if it ever happens, which he doesn't seem to think it will, Doc and Mary Steenburgess and his kids become the focus.
Yeah. You've got to do that. You've got to have Michael J. Fox in it. And to me, there's a certain almost irony in seeing Marty in today, not being able to play the guitar because of the Parkinson's versus because of the car wreck or whatever from the future and stuff. But everything I've seen indicated everyone involved would love to do another one. It's a classic thing. And certainly I get, you know, the Parkinson's stuff. Michael J. Fox couldn't be the lead or whatever, but he's got to be in it.
Yeah. The other interesting thing, as a guitar player, it's always amazed me. I don't know if Michael played or if he simply got a really good coach, because a lot of times when you're watching musicians in films, it's either very obvious they actually can play or very obvious they can't. Michael either can play or got very good coaching. He at least looks like he can play,
mm-hmm.
which is not always the case.
Be curious to find out which.
Yeah.
To me, the most amazing thing about that is about Michael J. Fox or whatever is he's raised like $450 million for Parkinson's research.
Yeah, and well, my father who suffers from that disease, I know I'm well aware of that.
So I mean, the guy has used his celebrity to excellent effect.
Yes, he has.
And I'm looking forward to the four-issue miniseries that IDW is doing.
So it's four issues, and it comes out next Wednesday, so I'm excited.
Comes out on the 21st, so next Wednesday, hopefully, I think this is going to go up after that. So
okay,
it
whatever.
It may already be out.
But I'm excited. It was funny. I was just kind of thinking, I wonder if they have one, since we're talking licensed properties, and you went, oh, of course, and it's coming out that day.
Well, yeah, and once I realized the date, it's like, oh, of course it's coming out that day.
Why not?
But it's fun when they take some properties that that are just really have a following.
Yeah.
And if they can do them and do them right. And Gail's going to be involved the stuff. So I'm, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. There are a few other licensed properties I would really love to see come out and be done well. And that's certainly one of them.
That one just feels so natural. Like it, you know. With the cartoon and everything, I'm like, how could there have never been a comic book?
Well, there was a comic, but it was based on the animated series.
Yeah, the cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay, with the dog.
With the dog, but not based on the movie.
Yeah. And like I said, I am happy yet surprised that in that 30th anniversary DVD Blu-ray set, they are including the complete animated series.
That was one of the things that made me get it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So... No, it's fun stuff. With a couple of the subscription boxes, they're doing time as the theme for October.
Right.
Which I'm very happy about, not just because we'll probably get some Back to the Future stuff.
You don't have to deal with Halloween.
Exactly.
Not another month full of zombies.
I'm hoping between the various boxes I'm getting, I will get a TARDIS, a Bill and Ted's phone booth, and a DeLorean all to an appropriate scale. So...
Get all your time travel devices on one shelf.
And if anyone could tell me where I could find a replica of an Omni from the old Voyager show, be all over that.
And go dig a hole in your backyard and get the time tunnel in there.
Too lazy for that.
Well, and no one listening to us remembers that show, probably.
Well, it's funny because I've got the two-season DVD set downstairs.
Really? I happen to have a friend who's a little older than me. It is like his all-time favorite show. So I have seen them all, mainly because I was forced to watch them by him.
I have not, just because I haven't had time to go through the set, but I love time travel.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to see if there's anything else exciting. Again, the $3.99 price point, man, two-thirds of the list this time, about.
Yeah.
It is here and here to stay. Again, $2.99, still got, 61 items on the list in the top 300, but fewer, farther between and lower on the list.
And still 23 at $3.50, so you've still got 84 items between $2.99 and $3.50.
Yeah. But again, 10 of those were dollar ones that were,
That's a different issue.
Yeah. Those were the filter that list. Oh, helps if I include the right publishers, cause they're apparently Marvel. I bet they're the Marvel firsts, aren't they? Or the true believers. They're the true believers ones.
Yeah. Which is why, like I said, but just looking at $2.99 and $3.50, there's still 84 books.
Yeah.
Which is something, unfortunately, there's also some crazy, ridiculously expensive ones. Three $7.99 books.
I think some of those are annuals.
Island Number 3 from Dark Horse, Gem and the Holograms at annual.
Well, and the Wonder Woman 77 special.
Yeah, okay.
And, man, talk about what's essentially something of a licensed property. It's based on the Linda Carter TV show.
Yep.
I'm really enjoying the Wonder Woman 77 stuff.
It is pretty good.
It is evocative of that era of the show, the sensibility, mm-hmm. whatever. Yet it's also just a really good Wonder Woman series.
Yeah, no, I actually completely agree. I don't like it quite as much as the Batman 66, but I like the Batman 66 show better too. So maybe it's that.
Yeah, I can see that. Don't get me wrong, I like the 66 Batman show, but there's something about the Wonder Woman one that was, it was more done straight, if you know what I mean. It's not as campy or whatever.
Oh, no, it was absolutely done straight.
But I would really like to see them do a Superman one based on the old TV show.
The George Reeves?
And then cross them over.
Oh, okay.
I think that would just be fun.
Here's the real interesting question. Do you think these are successful enough that Ken Johnson's phone is ringing and Marvel wants to do a Hulk one?
That's tough to answer for a couple of reasons. One, these are successful because they're digital first over at DC, and this is just icing on the cake to a degree.
Yeah, fair enough.
Two, I don't think Marvel really has either the infrastructure, kind of, granted they've got the Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited, they're not really doing the same sort of digital first push that DC is. And I don't think they would have any particular reason to do a show on the Hulk based on the old TV show.
That character was significantly different.
And hard to pull off well in a comic. It was more of a drama, and I think you take out Bill Bixby as an actor and, a live-action Hulk with Lou Ferrigno and such, and it could work, but you'd have to really have a writer who gets it.
Well, yeah, and that's why, yeah. And I don't know, it could be a licensing thing, too. I don't know how much Ken Johnson owns of that as opposed to, how much permission Marvel would need from him, if any.
I would think they'd be able to do it free and clear, but I don't know for sure. But yeah. Doing that, doing the Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man, and kind of getting that I think actually would be a fun series of either one-shots or whatnot or miniseries for Marvel to do. Kind of like they did the noir, the manga, and all that kind of stuff. Do the old school silver screen TV universe. Have the Hulk, have Spider-Man, have Doctor Strange. I'm trying to think who else got TV movies back in like the 70s or something.
Yeah. Well, but again, that Hulk show was so different than that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always said all of Ken Johnson's properties would make great comic books. I'm not sure why we haven't seen V and Alien Nation and some of that other stuff over the years.
V had at least an 18-issue series from DC back in the 80s.
Okay.
And Alien Nation had a couple from, I'm blanking on which publisher.
But the point is they existed.
They existed. I have the V1s. I don't think I've got the Alien Nation ones. And it was a mid-tier publisher. I want to say Dark Horse, but it was not. Or it might have been. I don't know. I don't remember. But that's, I mean, if somebody's got a good concept, good premise, it should go into the other mediums and stuff. It's fun. Other thing worth noting is just how much of the list is issue 12 or under. And we're yes. at 78% just about. The concept of an ongoing just is something I struggle with these days because it's so baked into my psyche just as an old school reader. But typically these days, drop it, relaunch it. It's a new volume, but it's essentially still ongoing, but it's not. So I really worry about that because I think going to a new number one so often, particularly if they're doing it at the end of every story arc, as they almost appear to be at Marvel, it runs the risk of leeching the sales power out of the new number one. And if it gets to where we're not checking out stuff as readers because it's a new story arc, or just one, we should be reading it because it's a new issue. Oh, it's a new issue. Let me see if it's to my liking. Mm-hmm. Nope, that doesn't do it. Okay, new creative team. Nope, that's not good enough now. Nope, new story arc. Nope, that's not good enough now. New number one. If that's not good enough, well, then they've got to, what, change the whole title? But even that's just kind of a transparent new number one. If they lose that, what do they have left? That just seems like a really bad place for the industry to get. And somewhere they could get very easily if they're not careful with the new number ones they're doing.
Yeah.
And it raises the need for a distinction between a new property and just a new volume versus a new title versus, you know, whatever.
Well, and it's funny, as a Marvel Unlimited reader, I will say this. In some ways, they are churning so fast. That's one of the reasons I've gone back to the older stuff.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the number one becomes available to me, they've already relaunched the series. It's like, well, okay, why bother reading that one?
Yeah.
It only lasted 6 issues.
Well, and I think it cuts down on the concept of a narrative continuity.
Yeah.
And that's something that really Marvel has some issues with, but DC is just struggling with and thrashing about so much on. It's painful.
Yeah.
Because I can read comics with one version of the Justice League having the new Batman, the powerless Superman, the current Wonder Woman and whatnot versus what I'm reading in the Justice League books where they're all fully powered and heroic and not matching what they are in their regular books. And it's just it doesn't seem like there is a DC universe anymore. And once you've kind of broken that illusion and that sense of we're following this reality and, oh, they're just telling stories, that, I think, cuts the urgency, the impulse to buy. And that's hard to get back.
But to be fair, they said that was the stated goal. They have succeeded. It might have been a foolish decision.
Well, I don't know about might have. I think it was definitely a foolish decision.
Fair enough.
I don't mind them branching out to other realities or trying to broaden their horizons. But to be negating the cohesion of the DC universe, I think it's just a bad idea.
I agree with you, but again, I'm old. I'm not the reader they're trying to get.
No, the reader they're trying to get are the people who are liking Arrow and Flash. And guess what? They have a continuity between those two shows.
Absolutely, they do.
You know, they're trying to go after the people that love the Marvel movies. And guess what? They've got a continuity between those movies, you know? So it seems like on the one hand, they're acknowledging that this is an important aspect, but dismissing it and poo-pooing it and stuff on the comic book level.
That's an interesting thing, though. Again, back to kind of movies, comics, TV shows, do they affect sales, yada. iZombie, you think DC brings it back?
Yes.
Or do they do like they're doing with Arrow or Digital First, like a in-between season in the summertime, or...
I would expect to see iZombie come back in some way, shape, or form, and I would recommend having it be something that is in line with the TV show, and I think doing the digital first is a perfectly good way to do that. Because let's face it, a lot of the people that are going to be interested in that stuff may not walk into a comic book store.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you can triple dip by doing it digital first, getting those sales to people who ever have an iPad or a computer or whatever,
if you can convince them to go to Comixology and know it's there.
You can do that. That's workable.
Yep.
I've got to imagine that Rob Thomas has some kind of a semblance of a equivalent to Joss Whedon's Brown Coats, the Martians or whatever from Veronica Mars, whatever.
Marshmallows.
Worst
name ever.
Yes. But my point is they could be mobilized.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you can get the digital sales. You can get those of us in the comic stores through the print stuff. You can get it into trade paperback, which you can then put out into the bookstores and get the mass market reader.
Yeah.
So it can be done. I think it should be done. And I've still got to start watching that show. I just haven't done that yet.
I think it'll be right up your alley.
Hope so. I'm just trying to catch up on Gotham, trying to stay current on Flash and Arrow as best I can. Just too much stuff to watch.
I know the feeling. I started out, I taped almost every new television show this series, and with the baseball playoffs being as great as they've been so far this year, a couple of days ago I went, okay, like this, I haven't even bothered with these other eight, forget it, I'm skipping them.
Yeah. Well, I'm liking things like Limitless and stuff, but that's part of why I've been struggling lately to keep up on my comic book reading, too.
Yeah.
Is just trying to keep up with the TV stuff, keep up with the reading, obviously doing all the work on the podcast, plus, you know, watching 3 movies for a Back to the Future episode, watching 12 hours of TV for a Daredevil episode. It eats up time. It's all fun to do, but it's...
That Daredevil episode was great, by the way.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I'm glad you finally got around to it.
Yeah. I'm not seeing any point in the Daredevil sales that would be indicative of that TV show having moved the needle at all on the comic.
Yeah.
But nor would I really have expected it to, because as brilliant as Wade's and Samney's run was, totally different vibe than we get in the TV show.
Yeah.
But I do think that kind of a TV show makes people more inclined to go read comics, so I do think it increases sales over time. Much like me having grown up watching the Super Friends on TV is part of why I've got a large comic book collection.
Yeah.
But it's hard to then point to this episode aired and this comic was bought. So, fun stuff.
Absolutely.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I'm good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and/or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.